Today is the 13th of March, and I'm at the home of Figgy and Joey Kay.
That's right.
And first of all, I just want to say thank you very much. Our residents' association, our history committee, appreciates your
our pleasure.
You're very welcome. Well, yeah, thank you.
Thank you. So, what I'd like to start with is before I turn the machine on, you told me that both of you lived down there for many years. So would you just tell me, we'll start with you, Figgy, tell me your age and tell me the year you were born and when you lived in the area, please.
My name is Figgy Kay. I was born March 17th, 1930. I'm 82 years, going to be 82 years old this week. I lived downtown from 1930 till 1958.
What are some of the streets you lived on?
I lived on all the streets. I lived on Robert, Major, Brunswick, Markham, Manning.
Okay, that covers plenty. So that was a 1958 when you got married?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So how many years was that, did you say?
54 years.
Wow. Okay, I think you're an authority. Okay, and Joey, would you just tell me your age and the year that you were born and how long you lived in that?
My name is Joe Kay, and I'm 86 years of age. I lived on Major Street for approximately 25 years. And I also lived on... When we came to this country, I was 4.5 years old. I lived on Brunswick, eventually moving to Palmerston and then Markham Street, but eventually wound up on Major Street at two addresses, number 3 and 63. And when we got married in 1958, we moved to Bathurst and Wilson.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, you lived on Major Street, and your brother is one of the people who is one of the boys of Major Street.
Yes.
And everybody has very fond memories. And
yes.
So would you just talk about that a little bit? You're the youngest of three boys.
I was the youngest of three brothers. Huh. My brother was who was lost in the Air Force. He was 5 years older than me. He was 22 years. And he went into training in 1942, mm-hmm. and he trained in Canada, in different parts of Ontario. He was a gunner with Lancaster bombers and other types of bombers. He did one tour of operations overseas and re-enlisted, and they went into pathfinding, and on his fourth mission, I believe he was shot down at that time.
Well, it's a tragedy for your family, no doubt. Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law was not able to talk about it ever. She was so pained, she wouldn't allow a picture on the wall.
So no pictures of your brother?
Yeah,
Well, I have some pictures to show you when we are.
But your mother couldn't tolerate having any
heart attack. She developed heart problems.
Tried to. By not talking about it, she felt that
it didn't happen.
It didn't happen, I suppose, in her mind.
So that was her way of coping. She thought she was better.
That was her way of coping. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Do you remember a change in your mother? Do you remember?
Absolutely. Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah. For many years, she was quite very quiet.
Yeah.
And it took a few years till she came around somewhat.
Right. I guess that everybody in your family suffered a massive loss.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, it did. You know, I have to add that every yurt site, him and his other brother would come to the shul, and they'd bring all his paraphernalia, his hat and his things, and they would put them down on a seat. And they didn't let anybody sit on that seat. And as the prayers were going on, and it would be sort of in his memory, we have plaques for him there.
very important documents here.
He was always in the boy's mind. Always.
So both of the brothers
both
always...
very devoted. I have never seen brothers. They just never gave up that he was lost. They spoke about him all the time, not in front of the mother, but in front of the wives, families, friends. He was always in our midst. My children feel that they know him.
What did they call him?
Solly.
Solly, right.
He was Solly. I never met him, but I feel like I really knew him through them. And that this all came, there was some other step, I believe, that would come. We'd have a Veterans Day, uh-huh. I'm sure.
Do you want to just...
This was him.
Okay. I want to just say, look at the picture.
Log book here.
Okay. So just let's talk about what you're showing me now.
This is when he went into training, 1942.
So who made this logbook that you're showing to me?
They had to keep this, and the commanding officer signs it. After
so this was Solly's book?
Yes, this is his personal book. But when he started,
with a nice writer.
His writing was gorgeous. It looks like
he was a commercial artist. He could do...
He was an artist?
He could do art, work of all kinds, especially... printing and writing.
This book is a real treasure. And how beautiful it is.
It kept, look.
That is... And also, do you want to say the other thing that you brought to the table?
Well, he sent back his personal log.
Uh-huh.
Book, with all his missions that he did over Berlin and Schweinfurt and Frankfurt, all the various parts of Germany that they were bombing. And like I said before, eventually in 1944, on the third mission, I believe, when he went into pathfinding operations, which is, I understand, very dangerous, they light up the targets over Germany. Mm-hmm. They fly very low. And he could not bail out because he was a tail gunner. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to get out of that position. So four of them bailed out, I believe, and three couldn't. To get out of the aircraft.
So the ones who went out survived?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
But he didn't bail out.
He was supposed to come home. He volunteered for another flight.
Yeah. I just felt what he was doing was very important.
Yeah. Yes. Eventually, the commanding officer writes that and you see missing at that point.
Oh, my God.
And the flight after that was missing.
The authorities came to the house to talk to the family.
So there wasn't a phone call. Somebody actually came to the door.
Rabbi Monson came. Mm-hmm. And there was a telegram that went missing. There was a telegram, I believe. I wasn't at home at the time. But eventually the rabbi came, and eventually after the war, the pilot came to the house. He was an American. His name is Jackson. He's all the way through. He's welcome here.
There's his name.
All the way through.
Yeah.
But this is quite a book because it tells you the Daily Star came to the house at one point. They were hit by flak. And they called him, he was short, they called him Shorty. Mm-hmm. And the Daily Star came to the house to find out. There's a true comics that they published in 1943-44. One of the flights, they landed with one circuit of gas left, and they managed to escape that. It's in this, right in here. Well, it's all documented here. If you go through it by page, by page.
But while you're looking for that, I just want to say that the other thing... Okay.
Dusseldorf, you see, in red, all these are important.
Right.
Berlin. Here's the one here. Hit by Kessel.
Right.
Hit by flak and lost. Mm. But they managed to get out of that one, you see. They managed to... They landed, the Daily Star came to the house.
The Star came to the house to what? What did they want from your family?
Excuse me?
You said the Daily Star came
to
your house.
They came because they want to know all about him, you see.
So they wanted... This was after they learned that he had died.
No.
Oh.
They came after that particular flight, which mm-hmm. was two comics. They were looking for action stories, and they came to find out where his family was, you know, to find out about this boy. And that's why they came to the house, to find out more about the person.
Right. Okay.
And, but my
so
brother,
that's he was alive and well at that time, but a fighter.
Oh no, he managed to escape that. They all got through that.
Would you just for the sake of this tape, would you also say the other thing that you brought to the table? Would just because the tape doesn't show pictures, so I just want you to describe what you have in your right hand. Yeah.
Well, this is. They returned a camera and one of his, what's it called, a cap.
Yeah.
This is his cap. They returned that, a camera that he had, his locker, I guess, and this book.
Yeah.
And his flying lock. That's what
got returned. Who brought these things back?
This by mail. It was sent back.
Pardon?
This was sent back by mail.
By mail?
Yeah, this was sent back by mail. Registered mail.
So it was in your parents' home, and
yes,
then
at
and
Three
then,
Major Street.
Right, at Three Major Street. Yes,
right, this is how I brought back.
Yeah. Okay.
And he wound up getting, he got his commission once he went into pathfinding. Mm-hmm. He became a pilot officer. Up until then, it was a sergeant, which there are pictures of here. But all these boys were all his friends.
Yeah, are these all the Major
Street
boys?
Four or five boys at Major Street.
These are all the Major Street boys. In one block, these boys were all killed.
Ulster too.
Which was very unusual.
Ulster College. Four or five boys.
Wow.
They're all lost. Anybody in their crew.
Well, and those are the boys of Major Street, and that's why we want to acknowledge
them.
Yeah.
Very unusual to have a group like that on one street. They're neighbors.
Imagine what happened to that street. I mean, it went into one massive depression, I'm sure. But you're saying that you never met him, and yet he's been part of your life.
Yes, very great part.
Yeah. Handsome.
Between him and his brother, his father was much more open about it.
Uh-huh. That's him. See, that's in training. It tells you here where he was at the time. It actually tells you all about us.
What I want to move on to now is, do you have any idea, since both of you grew up in the neighborhood, what brought your family to choose that neighborhood?
Everybody chose. All the immigrants lived around off College.
Uh-huh.
Synagogues were easily
The synagogues
available.
Were all located within
all
1 mile.
All families required
there
synagogue
ten
life.
There synagogues in 1 mile that I could mentioned to you, all the synagogues.
So what were the synagogues, some of the synagogues that you remember?
Okay.
Oh.
There was the Henry Street, it was called Henry Street, the Polish synagogue.
There was the Ostrovtsy Shul.
There was the Ostrovtsy and Cecil, which became something else.
The Men of England, these were big shuls.
Spran and Dundas, the Men of England. Now, there were many, many others. Small Stieblich houses.
They belonged to Stiebel.
On Cecil, on Urine Street.
There were houses.
On Baldwin Street, on D'Arcy Street. There were houses turned into synagogues.
It's a little bit like Lawrence and Bathurst now.
Except maybe they're a little more sophisticated.
Yeah, right,
these were homes, houses, converted houses.
So so the Jewish immigrants came to that area.
They came to that area within one block.
There was kosher butchers and kosher stores and, you know, no problem. In those days, everybody kept kosher and it was a big requirement. There was no problem to make purchases.
So whatever you needed was right there.
The market, the Jewish market, Kensington.
Kensington Market
wasn't far. Everything was available.
Do you remember specifically any of the stores? When you talked about, you named a whole lot of shuls. When you think of the stores, can you remember any of the stores in particular?
How about Normie Katz's fish store? Where was that?
Yeah, that was right on Baldwin Street.
Baldwin.
Uh-huh.
Normie Katz's fish store. What were the bakeries?
Dater's was always there.
Dater's
was there.
Creamery.
On Kensington.
Dater's Creamery. What were the bakeries?
There was a bakery there. There was Ladowski's, which is...
restaurant.
Which is
oh, that's United.
At Lawrence and Bathurst. I used to go in there quite often.
They're celebrating, I think, 100 anniversaries.
Okay, but I remember when it was downtown.
On Spadina. And what were some of the... There was Newman's Bakery on Spadina. I didn't shop there was, those days.
There was an egg store. Was it Pearl's? There was... right on Spadina, there was a store.
What was the kosher butcher my mother went to?
Now, as far as College Street, there was Rothbard's Drugstore. It was always a major
drugstore. Well, that was very famous.
Famous drugstore.
It was a drugstore on the corner of Major and College.
Major and College.
And if you had a problem, you didn't go to the doctor. You went to the drugstore, and Mr. Rothbard fixed you up.
That's right.
Who went to a doctor?
Nobody.
Who went Mr. Rothbard?
Mr. Rothbard was the expert.
He was the expert.
In those years, the societies, the people came from different parts of Poland, Landsmanship, they were called.
Yeah.
They would hire a doctor like Dr. Rosen and give him maybe $700 for the whole year, which would, take in service.
The members.
I could go there with a cold or something. So right on Palmerston he lived.
So he lived there and he had
He lived
an
on Palmerston
there.
Boulevard.
Okay.
He lived. And you could go there gratis.
We had Dr.
So this Landsmanship.
Landsmanship paid for that.
I see. So you paid a membership for it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they paid a membership.
And he had a certain salary.
Right. Yes.
And you could just go. He was like a drop-in clinic, a one-man drop-in clinic.
That's what it was.
He was the society doctor.
Yeah.
And he serviced all the society members of that particular society. Doctor for another society. Of course, they weren't too sickly.
Well, they were young. They were much younger.
They were young. Yeah. But that's the doctors who took care of the society members. They lived in the area. So that's why coming to live in that area, it covered all your needs.
So it was a real community.
Absolutely.
And a big extended
after
family.
After Seder, you could walk out on College. You could not get by. It's a wide street. You could not. Hundreds and
Everybody
hundreds of people would all be in our new clothes, Passover clothes, and we'd be walking and walking. Oh. This was after Seder. The young people would come up en masse,
Schbatzering. Yeah.
It was, we'd look each other over, see what your shoes, your clothes. It was just something that was done. Shul life was very popular. Very popular. I was telling somebody the other day that when a friend of mine would come into my house, a new friend, and my dad be home, and I'd say, "This is my dad, Mr. Feldman, this is my friend," and he'd look at her and he'd say, "So, tell me, where does your father daven?" And I would be kind of a question.
That would tell him everything about the family. And everything.
And then I'd say to him, "Why did you ask such a question?" He says, "Why not?" He says, "I found out everything."
Yeah.
I says, "What did you find out?" He says, "I found out she was Jewish. I found out that their family is observant. They go to shul. And she's a nice family. You can have her as a friend."
My brother, Ralph, an older brother of mine, he was a couple years older than Sully. He tells a cute story about Dr. Joe Greenberg. Uh-huh. Did you?
You know, I've called him. I'm going to call him again.
He tells a story. There were three boys. I think there was a sister. And he tells a story about if you didn't come to school, the truant officer would come to the house to check you out after a few days. Anyway, so he came to the house. This happens to be a true story as far as I remember. He says, "Joe, how come you went to school?" He says, Why went to school? He says, I couldn't go. Why couldn't you? My brother had my shoes.
Oh, my God. So they were poor?
Everybody was poor. There was the odd family. But you know what?
The parents was a guy.
We didn't know we were poor.
Joe can give you more of a story. He was an officer in the Air Force. He wasn't an air crew, but he's a very emotional kind of a guy.
I met his brother Muffle.
Muffle was the youngest. Joe was in the Air Force, you see. So he knew these 5-6 guys within a half a block.
He knew them. Lost.
But
he lived on Major Street.
But you're saying the families, most of you were poor.
But we didn't know
rougher, because...
Because everybody was the same.
On the same boat, basically, you know.
Yeah.
My father was
a milk driver, you see. So all the kids remember me today, the grandchildren remember me today. He was like the Pied Piper. He would take him on
his... He had a horse.
On the horse and wagon, then the truck in 1937.
Wait, don't go so fast. So your father was a horse and buggy.
He had a horse and wagon on Palmerston, and the market was a horse and wagon. In 1936, 35, 37. It was a horse. We used to go in the back to rub the horse down. We used to buy oats and barley and salt.
Everybody knew the horse.
Did the horse have a name?
Jumbo.
Jumbo, one of the horses.
The whole community, Jumbo. The kids all knew the horse.
I went with my father to buy a horse for $100. It was a big garage in downtown, which is now a big, huge building.
And where did Jumbo stay at night?
Where you keep a car. On Markham, it was a garage.
So there was a special garage for the horses.
It was special. It was like there weren't any cars. They didn't have cars. So that's where you kept your horse.
And it was a stable.
Do you remember that stable?
Absolutely.
How many horses were there, approximately?
No, this was his own horse.
Just one. Okay, so just Jumbo. Yeah.
I meet people to this day who tell me that Faye used to play with Jumbo and tell me all kinds of stories that Jumbo knew
which house to go to
when he was delivering.
Jumbo knew the route.
And they rode Jumbo and they played with Jumbo. He was a very colorful horse for the community.
Wow. And then you remember when your father replaced Jumbo with...
He replaced it with a Fargo truck, eventually, in about 1938, something like that. I'm not sure that. 38, something like that. He replaced it in the last part of the 30s.
Do we know the fate of Jumbo? Jumbo?
Actually, he had white and... He was kind of white and black. He's a big horse, because I remember driving him on Christie. There was a dairy. It was called... Dockery's Dairy on Christie. Became the 7-Up after that on Christie. Mm-hmm. That was where they got the milk. Those years, a gentleman would bring in big, huge cans, and they pasteurized it in these various dairies. But my father knew the man who used to go out to the farm to bring in these cans of milk fresh from the cows, and they'd pasteurize it. So, like, he was involved with 3 or 4 dairies over also about a 20-year, 25-year span of delivering milk.
Did you sometimes go with your father?
All of us went. We used to go. Those years, there were no bylaws. He'd start off at sometimes 1, 2 in the morning. Some years later, it was a bylaw, and you couldn't start till 6 in the morning to deliver this milk. Mm-hmm. And those years, Eglinton was like the country.
Yeah, I'll bet.
For sure.
Yeah.
He had the odd wealthy customer up there, had a house up there. And sometimes we'd have a bicycle and we'd have 2 carriers of milk. Each carried 8 quarts. And instead of the horse doing the work, the boys would drive the milk to the houses and help deliver the milk.
Yeah.
We all did that.
So you worked at a young age?
Absolutely, always. Yeah. We all did that. Well, you know, 10, 12, those ages, we all helped deliver the milk that age.
The why was very important, the Jewish why.
Where was it at that time?
In Brunswick.
Well, originally it was on Simcoe, where the Mount Sinai Hospital
that one.
Is. But she,
okay.
Jewish why on Brunswick was
Brunswick
a lifesaver.
In what way?
I belonged. Membership was $5. We had a group of about 14 girls, and we could go swimming. It was $5 a year. We could go swimming. We could have a club room, and we'd meet. They gave us a counselor. Then there was, we got older, there was some dances that we could go to on a Sunday night. The only thing is we never got to pay the $5.
They let you pay it out, you see.
They let us pay it out, but somehow it never got paid out. And one day they sent a counselor, and she says, look, you have to pay up your membership. You have to go home, tell your parent. Okay, came home, told the parent. Somehow we paid maybe half. but they never bothered us. And they didn't throw us out. It was difficult. You know, people had a lot of kids, but it was a godsend.
So it was a real place
for you to
go.
It was a godsend. The Jewish community of kids did their athletics there. There was all kinds of activities. Whatever game you needed to play or wanted, it was there. The swimming, badminton, volleyball, this, that. It was and wonderful people who the social workers were great.
So, and for an example, what would the social workers do? In what ways did you use them?
Well, first of all, they supervised all these activities. Mm-hmm. I guess hiring staff, and they would come and they would get to know us. And as they would help us form the group and tell us how to form a group. We needed a president, we needed this, and how do we elect things. And I think they could weed out problems. If there was home problems, I think they could sense it or get a kid to talk about it. But they were very visible.
So,
very visible.
So if there were some difficulties, you could speak to them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure. You know, when I think back as to what their job really was, it was to see what there were problems, and to see that we were kept in the programs, so that we wouldn't be on the street, getting into trouble. This place, you didn't get into trouble. It was a wonderful place. You could shower there and be there and swim. It was a wonderful, wonderful place. And for teenagers, it was even better, because it was a place to meet. Mm-hmm. Today, the kids run to bars and this, that didn't exist. You came to the Y. You came Sunday night to the Y dance, and you met everybody. And it was very well organized, and there was no big money.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who paid up their membership. I don't know how they ran the buildings.
Well, I guess I assume that it was subsidized.
I'm sure it had to be.
Of course, they had to pay.
And that's how the community got to really know each other. Teenagers, as they got older, they met, they married, and it was wonderful. It's too bad they don't have a center point like that today.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Y at
Lawrence Spadina, that's where it moved to back.
It might not be the same.
I don't know if that's the same.
Yeah.
Because
they're
spread out.
No, but they also helped. Yeah. They also helped.
Well, that was the same Y.
Naturally.
Yeah. Did you go to the Y also?
I went to the Y. I went to the Y at mostly at Spadina and Blur, where we played handball three times.
I went there too.
Okay.
I was a fabulous badminton player.
Really?
I have
to tell you, I played every Sunday morning at the JCC, I play badminton.
Oh, do you? When you go, you think
at
of me.
Spadina. I will. I promise I will.
And then when the Y opened here for the first year or two, they never had handball courts. When it opened, mm-hmm. I think the second year or the third year they had it. I think I belonged for a short time, and I got married at that point, and I got busy with other things.
Well, it really it was
a focal
mistake.
Point, I should have kept it up because
and it served a great purpose. It kept the kids off the street. I even had a little summer job. I worked with a nursery
at the Y.
I was the junior.
Yeah, so there
girl.
Was a,
there was
yeah.
an older person girl. Uh-huh. And we would be with the children. It was a summer job. It was a wonderful summer job for a kid. In a safe atmosphere, supervised. It served a lot of purposes to the entire community. It was really a lot of good memories. Good memories.
For both of you, obviously.
Yes. Yeah. And not ourselves. There were hundreds and hundreds of kids that were involved.
So it was, they had good programs and it was a safe
very
place.
Good and very safe. Yeah. I never heard of coaches hurting kids or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it existed. I never saw that heard. I didn't know what that was. But it was a wonderful, wonderful place.
I want to go back just a small step because you said Sunday night were dances.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about those years when you were down there, about dating. What were you doing at 15, at 18? And what happened?
15, we weren't dating.
So what? When did dating
we
start?
We all loved to dance. We were into music of the day.
Uh-huh.
And if the guy couldn't dance, he was finished. And if the girl couldn't dance, she was finished.
I have to.
It was social.
For boys, those years.
Yeah.
When we were 17, 18, they started to rent over some of the buildings on College Street, different club rooms, and the boys would rent that for so much a month.
For social.
There were socials, and they'd also have different parties, dances, and so forth. But that was very prominent. There were different names for these different clubs. They had probably half a dozen in maybe a 25-year span between College Street and Spadina. They rented some of the commercial buildings, they rented a room.
So there'd be a large room and turn on a record player.
Yeah.
That
was a little bit more sophisticated. A little bit more older.
The boys were 1920.
They'd invite the girls up there. It was on a different basis. They would invite the girls.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the whole gang.
Nobody.
Just, right.
You, everybody went. But that was very prevalent too.
But that was very cute what you said. If you didn't know how to dance,
forget it. You were finished.
Do you still dance?
Yeah.
But besides that, it was very big to go down to the lakeshore. There was a place called Biggert's. They featured dancing, right on Lake Ontario, near the Palais Royal.
Uh-huh.
Especially in the summer months,
they
have different places going where a lot of the guys were going.
But it sounds like dancing was significant.
Dancing was a very important.
You speak Yiddish? A little, yeah.
My mother used, all of us used to say to me, "Fegi, noch de chasene tanzt man nicht." But you know, if the guy, he could be the biggest jerk, but if he could dance, he was marvelous. And she'd say, "Noch de chasene tanzt man nicht."
That's all over after that.
I think she was right. So dancing was something that you enjoyed.
Yes.
But in terms of dating, you said to me, at 15 you didn't date.
No, they didn't really date.
They went in groups of girls.
Groups. The girls would make an evening and invite a bunch of boys, but not on a one-to-one basis.
So when did you? How did you meet each other? How did people eventually pair off?
A lot of people met at the Y.
Uh-huh. Did you meet at the Y?
Yes.
I was playing handball and I saw this. I'm looking up, you know, it's down like in the pit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking up at this nice-looking girl.
I was watching them play.
With skinny legs. I'm looking up this girl.
You saw her really from the handball court.
Yes, you did.
And then?
That's right.
And then, I don't know, he got my phone number somewhere. I didn't know him. I never saw him. I did not know him.
But he phoned you and said.
Yes, yeah.
So how old were you at that time when you noticed?
Well, I was an old bachelor. I was about 32.
Uh-huh.
Peggy was quite a bit younger.
She's still gorgeous.
All right, please. Absolutely. I'm half dead. Got 2 hours? I'll tell you about it.
But that's a lovely story.
A lot of the kids met there. They did. Through the dances, through the social groups. And it was very nice. It wasn't a rough crowd.
Mm-hmm.
The boys were gentlemen. The girls were, you know, parents watch kids like hawks.
Yeah.
Nobody stepped out of line here. So it was a different time, and it served a wonderful purpose. And when I go downtown now, I stand in the middle of College Street, and I look around, and I just feel this spirit. It's a spirit. It's got a soul. Memories of all the streets, the places that we knew. And
we knew all the
streets. We didn't live there a lifetime, but so much happened, and you were with the community.
You know, I'm sorry this is not a videotape because you're speaking to me and you're using your arms.
Well, there's emotion. I'm emotional about it.
But I can feel the joy.
I can go back to areas here. I have no feelings for them at all.
Yeah.
Because on College Street, you could go from Gerstein's drugstore to the confectionery store to the various stores that you knew every store, to Rothbard's drugstore. You knew every single store. And you passed it every day of the week.
You knew every store.
And you got to know them.
You knew the storekeeper.
They knew you.
So you knew them, they knew you.
All the vendors, you knew them.
Yeah.
Whether it was a jewelry store, or the bakery shop, Cones, or every single store.
Every kid worked in Cones Bakery. All the girls.
So it was really a little shtetl.
Absolutely.
It was a community.
That's what it was in the 40s.
We went back. Lansdowne School had a 100th anniversary. And then we all thought we're going to go, not go. What are we going to?
Yeah,
we're
going. Back,
I'm going to tell you, it's a long time. And I remember that night, people were coming out of the woodwork. Faggy. I knew him in grade 2. You know me. And I had to think. It was just wonderful. People were coming all over, meeting each other, and recognizing each other and catching up on what happened in our life. It was a wonderful school. And where can you go that you have such memories?
Yeah, and a wonderful neighborhood.
Wonderful neighborhood.
Did you feel that way about it, too?
Absolutely.
You did.
I knew everybody, and everybody knew me down there.
You knew the street that you lived on.
So you felt you belonged.
Oh, yes.
I knew every corner, every block, every inch.
It wasn't isolated. People were very helpful to each other.
In what ways?
Neighbors were good to each other. I'm not that aware for myself, but for my parents, I'm sure neighbors were very helpful.
Well,
if you had to go away, you had to leave a child somewhere, with no problem.
You must remember, you couldn't afford to keep a house yourself in most cases.
Yeah, you had tenants.
You rented the house. You had to rent out every room. So, and everybody was kind of the same boat. You'd have somebody renting your flat with three children. A lot of times they'd come down, maybe they didn't have full supper. The kids would see you eating the food. So my mother maybe would make the kid a sandwich because, you know.
Yeah.
It was completely different
Muttle,
than what you could imagine today.
I knew Muttle in 1939. He was the tenant in our house, him and two other siblings. I mean, I feel like he's a brother. I haven't seen him in a million years, and we just met
last week, and
we were so happy to see each other, bringing each other up to date. We lived together, so it became like a family because the tenants were...
So nobody had a little den or extra rooms. Every room had
bodies sleeping in there.
There was no den.
No, but
there was a living room.
Are you familiar with the bagel on College? If it's still there.
It's not there anymore.
Not at all.
That's too bad.
I'm going to tell you a story about it. The gentleman, his name was Benny.
Uh-huh.
And when he came to the country in the early 50s as an immigrant, he started, the original bakery was closer to Augusta than it was to Spadina, which he opened up some years later. But he had a way of baking bagels different than the others. It was geflochten, it was fluted. Different.
I know geflochten, I know that.
And he rented, before he got married, he rented a house at a room on 3 Major, and it was on the third floor. They're called a boydom. A bedroom is a boydom. And the thing didn't even have heat, but we joke
an
about
attic.
It today.
It was an attic. A boydom
there.
Is an attic.
It was an attic. Yeah.
So that's the man who owned the bagel?
Yeah. The man who owned the bagel.
He lived in his house.
Eventually, you know, I used to see him later years, you know, and with his wife, and they ran that bagel for many years. It was known all over the CBC, all over. Even the Gentile crowds, you come to this bagel to have the soup and the meals that they served.
So when
when
he was renting a room from your family, had he started the bagel yet or not yet?
He opened one up, yes, but for I don't know for how long, two, 3 years. Eventually, he either bought the building closer to Spadina, which there he really established himself. There, but it was a bagel. It was called a bagel.
Yeah, some of us called it the dirty bagel.
Yes.
I didn't want to mention it. I didn't want to get into
that. I was at the Mount Sinai. I had surgery, and now they're bringing me food. I could not eat this food. I couldn't eat it. And I said, Joey, you have to bring me food, or I will not die of the condition. I will die of malnutrition here. What should I bring you? I go to the dirty bagel and bring me a bowl of soup. Somehow that didn't sound right. I'm here sick, and I'm asking, go to the dirty bagel. I survived on that soup, let me tell you.
Well, the food was delicious.
Benny and Harriet.
Yeah. Lots of wonderful memories that you don't have up here in the suburbs. It's that's why I can understand you living down there.
Yeah. How did people what did you have directly behind your homes? I mean,
there was backyards.
Backyards, and how were they used?
They weren't used a great deal.
I think my father tried to plant vegetables in some case. Partly vegetables and some flowers, I remember. Some flowers and some vegetables. But we also have always had this garage in the back. Had a garage.
And we had the porch to sit on in the summer.
The porch?
Yeah,
where was that?
The front of the house.
Okay.
Had a veranda.
Right.
You could sit there. Kids didn't really just use the backyard.
Okay.
You went to the Y. You went swimming. What are you going to sit in the backyard there?
Yeah. So the front porch or the veranda was used more.
Yeah, a lot of people like to sit out there in the summertime.
In the evening,
yes,
that was really used.
Because there was no real air conditioning. There was no air conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Right. He was saying there was no air conditioning.
No.
We used to go, there was one year, a few times, we all went into the park right along College Street, Queens Park. So hot that one in the morning we went up, take on a blanket and just go and get it to try to cool off. All this grass was there.
So you would go and go to sleep
on
the grass?
Yeah, for 3 hours.
Yeah, they'd bring blankets and pillows.
Couldn't sleep anyhow. So
they sleep there.
And we had the opposite. In 40-something, we had such a snowstorm, the streetcars couldn't run on College Street.
Oh, my God.
It was so high.
Yeah. But you're saying that you planted some vegetables, some flowers.
Yeah.
But it was the front that was used.
It was the front. Who are you going to see in the back?
Yeah.
Nobody.
I feel the same way. I love the front.
The porch was part of your house, and neighbors could talk across and visit. You didn't even have to go over. You could cross the talk on the porches, and you got to know everybody.
Yeah.
And then you could see the people going by, so you knew who already lives on the street. The ones that you saw all the time were people who lived there.
And did your family use the front porch? Did your family use the front porch too?
Yes, certainly. Yeah. It got quite hot. You know, July, August was hot.
Yeah.
And we'd sit out front if the flies didn't bother you too much.
Yeah.
And you take Lansdowne School. That was like a parochial.
Because they were all Jewish kids.
It was all Jewish kids.
Yeah.
Actually, we made friends.
We had one Jewish teacher.
There might have been the half a dozen blacks, and you'd make friends with two or three of them.
Uh-huh.
We were quite friendly with them.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
And there was the odd Italian. I still remember D'Angelo.
There was a fellow next door. They were an Italian family, and when they came, the baby was born, and they named them America. They were wonderful.
This was an Italian family named the child America.
They were wonderful families.
People.
They were like the Jewish people.
Got along very well.
Family oriented, good neighbors. They were not anti-Semitic in any shape or form. They were very good friends. Very good friends.
But you also remember some black families, both of you were saying
that.
On Robert Street, Aggie. And her family. She was a friend to everybody. My mother knew Aggie like she would know the rest of my friends. My middle sister went with Aggie. Aggie was a big black lady, a marvelous, marvelous athlete, a baseball player A1. We never thought of her as being black. She was us.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcomed in her homes. We went to their homes. The neighbors were... I did not experience anti-Semitism. I can honestly say I never did. The only experiences we had was in the school. In those years, the female teachers, was during the war.
They were not allowed
to marry.
No, they couldn't get married.
They were spinsters.
No.
So if somebody was married, she wouldn't leave the job.
No, she couldn't teach. They were spinsters. No.
So these were women who knew nothing about children. Nothing. And most of them were very difficult. They were cruel.
Well, I would say some.
They were cruel. They would hit you. You were scared stiff of them.
They were allowed to hit you.
They should have worked in a ladies' prison. They would have been good in a place like that, not with kids. But because of the shortage of teachers, they hired these women, and they were spent. What a silly law.
I never heard that before. It's so interesting.
They could not be married women. So what did they know about kids? Here you had maybe a 60-year-old woman dealing with an 8-year-old.
And who knows what her own frustration was.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was not such good experience. The male teachers were very good. The male teachers that were left were very good. We had one Jewish teacher, a Mr. Sandler. If ever there was a problem that we thought that somebody was making some slurry remarks, we would go to Mr. Sandler and tell him, and he was a spokesperson.
This will give you a better
get to the root, and he'd fix it.
Yeah. What is this? These are pictures of...
I think Mr. Sandler's son became a doctor.
And what are these pictures you're showing
this
me?
This is we won.
At Lansdowne School.
Volleyball. I was a captain here.
This is you?
Yeah.
This is our principal, Mr. Wright.
He was famous. Every Jewish mother knew this man. He was so Anglo-Saxon, and he was dealing with all these immigrants.
Just one at a time.
I was very skinny. That was a year after.
So you were always athletic.
Yes, I thought it was.
Well, you talked about playing handball years later.
My brother was even more so than when it was lost.
He was. He could ski.
I think he had a championship boxing bout at the arena, Mutual Street Arena, one year. He was very athletic. He was an excellent pitcher, excellent ball player.
Yeah, yeah.
He was really good.
So he was athletic and you
very
were athletic.
Athletic.
And you loved dancing. But you also
I was athletic too. I
you
swam
played,
and I played.
And you said you played
handball.
Badminton.
Yeah, I was
very
good.
So you're two jocks.
I was so arrogant that if somebody came over to join, make up a foursome, and I knew the quality of their playing and it didn't suit me, I'd put the racket down and say, I'm sorry, I'm not playing. What a terrible thing. I hated myself for that.
Well, but it wouldn't have been much of a challenge for you.
But still, honey, it wasn't nice to hurt somebody like that.
So both of you were athletes.
We were.
Yeah.
Well, we thought we were. You know, those years, yeah.
Yeah, we were. We were involved. And this principal was an amazing man. Amazing. He was absolutely Anglo-Saxon, and here he's dealing with all these immigrant families. But they loved him.
He was the best friend of the Jews. They eventually hired him at Chet.
Was it Chet or the Associated?
The Associated hired him.
Oh, really? Yeah. So one of the Jewish day schools hired him.
Yes.
They hired him for quite a few years.
I think it was after his retirement that they needed some help.
Now, Mr. Might.
Now what? These were both teams, sports teams.
Yes, that's volleyball.
This is volleyball.
We won the championship.
Volleyball.
Were the classes mixed? Like when you were in elementary school, boys and girls in the same class?
Oh, yes.
And in high school?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. My daughter went to Associated, and then she graduated Chet.
So she went right through the Hebrew Day School
and
system.
And so did her children.
Uh-huh. So that's a good education.
Really, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good Jewish education, Hebrew education. It's very good. It is. When they speak the language, I do not.
So they know Hebrew.
Oh yeah,
they all speak Hebrew.
They speak Hebrew very well, very comfortable with it.
And did you both grow up speaking Yiddish?
Yes.
Yes,
both of you.
Yes,
that's what you spoke at home.
Yes, at home you opened the door,
especially to my
mother, and immediately you spoke Yiddish.
Uh huh. And say when you were 10 years old on the street, that was all in English.
Pretty well. To your friends,
street, sure.
But to your family,
always.
To my parents, I spoke Yiddish.
Mostly.
I also went to Yiddish school.
Uh-huh.
In those years, my dad, we're three girls, and from an Orthodox family, and my dad's, I don't need girls to say Kaddish. I don't believe in that. So you have to go to Yiddish school to learn to read and write Yiddish. I'm not going to worry about the davening and the prayers because I don't expect that from daughters.
So you grew up one of three girls and you grew up one of three boys.
Yes. Yes. That's why I don't know how to deal with men.
But you're learning. But you both said that the houses were filled with people. Any extra rooms in both of your homes would have had extra people renting space.
There was another family living there.
No such thing, no.
There would be a family living on the upstairs. The owners of the house lived downstairs. There was always, everybody had an extra family. There was one girl in our group, one out of all these girls. She lived on Howland. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful house.
So that was north of Door.
Just their family.
Uh-huh.
No roomers, no tenant. They even had a basement, which was gorgeous. Our basements were cellars,
yeah.
Finster, dark, not hers. But that was one.
Yeah. Her father
15 girls.
Had a manufacturing. He manufactured Chesterfields. So uh-huh. He was in a little with a better position.
Yeah,
in fact, he owned
was,
something, you know.
But it shows how significant that 75 years later, you remember her house on Howard with
how
a nice
could
basement.
I not remember that. There was,
yeah.
She was one, only
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of work did your family do?
My father was a paper hanger.
Uh-huh.
He worked private. He took on jobs. That's what he did.
So that was
and he did wonderful work.
Yeah.
My mother used to yell at him, "You do too good a job. It lasts
too long." They
won't call
him back for 20 years.
But she probably was a little bit serious about it.
She was very serious about it.
For sure.
He was a very interesting man. He was very political.
He could read from morning to night.
Yeah, he could read English. He could read the papers.
He lived with us for the last 10 years. I used to...
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. After we lost my mother, he came to live with us.
Uh-huh. But he was an intellectual man.
Yes.
He could read,
He was always reading.
English and Yiddish?
English, yes, and he never went to school.
He taught himself how to
read. He was self-taught. He could read the paper from cover to cover. He would explain things to us. He'd say, "See this headline, what does it mean?" I said, "I don't know. I don't understand the way they contract." You don't know.
He used to say,
go to school and you don't know. I'll
he used
tell
to say
you.
To Faggy, she was a baby, Come on over here. I don't want you to grow up on Nah. To vux on Nah.
And I knew all the stories about the old country.
Fool. I want you to teach yourself. Learn something.
I knew all the stories about his shtetl. I knew exactly what was there. He said there was a river, a castle. I didn't believe him, but I knew about it. It was true. There was.
Where was he from?
Drilch, Poland.
Uh-huh.
And some friends of ours went back to Drilch in the last number of years. And I said, check it out. See if there was a castle and there.
Wow.
He always told us stories. He insisted that we knew where the beginnings were. So he was well-read.
He could
person,
read. He could learn.
Well-informed.
He didn't have the opportunity to be educated, but he was intelligent
self-educated,
and self-educated.
Really,
that's
self-educated.
Right. He never had the opportunity.
He was an activist, and yet he was religious.
Uh-huh.
Which was unusual.
An activist in the
An activist
way.
For the working people.
Uh-huh.
He loved to go to lectures to hear what's going on with working people. He wanted to know what was going on in the world. And yet he was religious. He was Shomer Shabbos. He never worked Shabbos in his life. Shul was a focal point of his life and ours. But he was very interested in people and how they live, how they make a living. The rights, the wrongs.
So the shul was one focal point.
Oh, yeah.
The Y was another one. Lansdowne School was another one.
Oh, yes.
The front porch was another one.
And he belonged to the United Jewish People's Order.
UJPO. Oh, I know that.
Yes,
I remember that.
For a religious man, that was unusual because they were not religious people. But he found he got educated. That's where he learned about what's going on with people.
So
but my dad,
his dad belonged too.
He was different. He was a people's person.
Yeah.
When he moved from downtown to Carmichael after we got married a few years, he had his neighbors, a Mr.
Harmston.
Argent. Both gentlemen, very nice people. Mr. Harmston could come into his house, and he'd make
breakfast.
A cup of coffee all the time. On Shabbat, if my dad wasn't well, he'd go and buy the challah for him. He'd drive him to synagogue.
My father-in-law drove Shabbos.
His Gentile neighbor would drive him.
And then pick him up.
He called him Louis, and after about 20 years, he said, why don't we call each other by our first name?
Yeah, they called him Mr.
Mr.
They didn't want his to be
father,
familiar too soon.
His father was a very colorful man. He could sing. He was a people's person.
He was the president of his organization.
And
when he got there, he says to him, I'm going to sing you a song. The first thing he did after we... After 1 month, they invite the fellow family's residents there. So he came up with the song he's going to sing, in which he could sing. He had a voice.
He had a beautiful voice. He used to sing in a choir.
I have a watch of his. He won it in the Jew. He is just on a Jewish hour.
I'm going to come back to some of this. These are wonderful stories.
My father was the most colorful man I ever met. They celebrate a 50th wedding anniversary. And in those days, I didn't even know what a 50th wedding anniversary was. I didn't even know anybody had one. Anyways, the boy said, you know, the parents are 50th. We got to do something. So my oldest brother-in-law says, okay, we'll have a little party in the house. We'll invite some friends. Okay, good. We'll make it a surprise. And then we thought a surprise. Not so good. My mother-in-law always had a heart problem.
Yeah.
So one day we tell him. He said, oh, that's nice. So where's this going to be? We said, at Ralph's house. He's where? Ralph has a small house. I said, so? He's no. I said, well, what would you like? He's, I want a hall. I want an orchestra.
Well, he was the president of all these.
I want you to take movies.
He was the president of the Oshrover, the OMBS. He could be president of the Upter.
He was president of everything.
So he belonged to many things, you know. But he could...
We made him a gorgeous 50.
He didn't want something small and modest.
No way. An orchestra, movies. And he told us which orchestra, which movies.
Well, he knew
and
all
I like to have gold tablecloths. And we came dressed in gold dresses.
Wow.
They rented a hall in Lawrence, I remember.
It was unbelievable.
Matter of fact, you know, they invited J.B. Sauce.
Oh, yeah.
He came in.
It was unbelievable.
He get invited.
But he orchestrated all of it. He told us which caterer, what food. I mean, we were going to have this little part, but you know what? It was great. It was what they liked, what they wanted.
And who decided that you would wear gold dresses?
I think he did. He picked the gold tablecloth. He knew about these things.
Tacky and fun. Great stories.
Great story. He was a special man.
So you're saying then that your father lived with you after your mother died?
Yes, my mother died at the age of 62 suddenly, and my father lived downtown, and he doesn't know nothing about a kitchen, he doesn't know about cooking, and he's religious. I said, what's going to happen to him? Where will he go? Where will he eat on a daily basis? Anyways, Joey and I thought about it, and I says, I was running down with pots and pans. I said, this is impossible. He lived downtown, I live up here. This can't go on. So we talked about it, and then we said to him, would you like to live with us? And he says, if Joey would allow it. And Joey said yes.
Well, he never mixed into anything.
He was marvelous.
It's hard to not mix in.
He did mix in. When he saw a wrong, which was really a wrong, and we benefited.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just
think with one child. If he saw we were doing
if he saw
he would try
he
to correct
my
us.
Daughter right. adored him.
He'd explain to us.
She adored him. She'd come home every day. Where's Zadie? I said, how about me? She said, I know you're here. He would listen to her about her schooling and talk with her and help her, and it was a very good relationship. It really was. We gave him dignity, a place of honor, and no money. There was no money. Mm-hmm. It was just our...
But he was welcome here.
Absolutely welcome.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm going to come back to this.
We're telling you all these stories. I'm sure she's really not interested.
No, these are wonderful. And believe me, I'm happy to have all of this information. I want to come back to one thing about the neighborhood there, and that is... We talked about the front porches. We talked about all these wonderful communities. What about the back lanes? First of all, where the streets you lived on, were the back lanes paved? And the other is, did you use the back lanes in any way?
We always used the back lanes because we either had a horse or a vehicle. Mm-hmm. We had to use the back lanes. There was no other way. Uh-huh. We knew the back lanes inside out. We had to know all the entrances and exits. Uh-huh. We had to know the back
lanes. And
not just that, even to go to school, to Lansdowne Public School, I used the back lanes sometimes.
Okay.
The shortcut.
Yeah, yeah. So that back lane was used a lot.
Quite a bit.
Was it paved or was it not paved? Do you remember?
It wasn't paved.
Yeah.
It was a hard surface somehow.
Okay.
It wasn't paved.
Hard mud.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what?
Okay. Well, because I know some were. And what about your...
No.
Back lanes
were
not...
We didn't have a car.
Yeah.
Well, they never had a horse. So
I had no reason to use back lanes.
Yeah.
Okay. Excuse me.
So your family came from Poland.
Poland.
Where did your family
Poland come? Also.
Close to each other?
Well,
where's your family from?
The state, I understand, were...
I'm sure they're not far away.
Maybe 100 miles different. I'm not sure. The distance.
Tomorrow?
Okay. Maybe 100 miles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But were you born in Poland?
I was born...
You were born...
The three of us...
The three children,
came
yes.
to this country.
And you were four at the time.
Three children. My mother came here 1 year after my dad, in 1929, 1930. My dad arrived here a year prior to that, and then he sent for us.
Okay. That's a very... I have that story with my grandfather.
Also, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
What was your maiden name? Oh, you're from Montreal.
I'm from Montreal.
Yeah. Oh, you're from Montreal. Yeah.
Did anybody have pets at that time? Any animals in the house other than mice?
my dad always had dogs, always. And cats. Dogs and cats. Always had. Always.
Were they indoor animals or were they most of the time?
Both.
Yeah.
Both.
Uh-huh.
And my mother never learned to speak English. She had a hearing loss.
Uh-huh.
So all these animals had a Yiddish name.
And they understood Yiddish.
They understood Yiddish.
Do you remember some of the names?
Trixie. Like I said, just Jumbo.
Jumbo, yeah.
There were many, many others that I can, if I think about it.
We used to have a cat whose name was Quetzal.
Oh, Quetzal, that's a good name.
That's even more appropriate.
Anything more about the stores? You talked a lot about the stores on College, Spadina.
Every store was a Jewish store.
Yeah.
There was Cohen's
we knew
Bakery. There was Rothbard's drugstore. How about Halperin's?
Which one?
Halperin's drugstore.
Yes.
Did they come later?
On Spadina. That was down there.
No. There was another one on
You're
College.
You're talking about Dundas and...
No. On College.
There were
Wasn't there a Halperin's on College?
There were stores that changed names and different
there
things.
There was a
besides Rothbard's, there was others. Axsmith was there.
Rothbard's became Axsmith.
And Shoppers, as a matter of fact, real Shoppers, he was at Lippincott College, his father. When we bumped into the Mount Sinai.
Oh, yeah, what was
couldn't
his name?
Get over it.
The Marvell?
We happened to bump into
Marvell,
the owner
of the center
was in Shoppers.
At so the Mount Sinai in her name, Marvell Center. You shouldn't know it's the breast center.
I have to tell you a story. I'm going to take that for a second. We're down at the Mount Sinai. I forget why I was there. And we're having a coffee. And in front of me, this lady in front of me, she's yelling, what's his first name? What's
Isn't that awful? I can't remember his name.
She's calling him by
Murray.
The first
Murray.
Murray.
Anyway, I says to Peggy, that looks like Mr. Coffler. She says, sure it is. Anyway, we sat down and they were sitting there. She says, I'll go over and say hello. I says, you're not.
Yeah, I said, I'm
tell my
go
wife you're not.
Her.
If you tell her you're not, she's going to go.
He
we finished
addressed.
The sandwich and our coffee. And we says, Mr. Coffler. And my wife introduced herself. And
because my daughter's a pharmacist.
Oh.
And he did the graduation.
He did the
dissertation.
He
charged the student.
He charged the Canadian Indian. It had to be 25 years ago. Oh, that's
no,
how.
No, this
out.
Was at the U of T when Randy graduated.
At the convocation.
So he spoke.
He spoke.
So I says to him.
So I reminded him.
I remember you doing this. He couldn't get over
he
it.
He was so excited. He said, "Am I glad you came
says,
over?"
Where
my
did
husband
you
told
he
me not to
me,
come.
I said, where did you live? I says, well, I lived at a major college. I went by your father's store every day. He couldn't get over that.
He was so excited.
He said, He says, how old are you? He says, I told him, I think he was 84. He says, 85. This is a couple of years ago.
I'm telling you, he
leave us alone after that.
That we remembered it.
So that was the original store?
College Street, a department store. Near
Bathurst. That was what eventually became this huge.
He did what he did with that store.
Did you ever meet them?
I've seen them. I could picture them, but I don't know them, and they don't know me. But I can certainly picture them.
I had to go up. He says to me, what are you doing here? I said, I'm going up to the Marvell.
She thanked
and
him for that
arrangement. Oh, that's took my hand. He said, I wish you well. I hope Marvell everything goes well, and so did she. Thank God it was. But they were so caring.
And he said,
you're not going to, I wouldn't
I
go
said,
over.
You're not. No, haven't
you? But what you said
tell
before
her you're
was,
not.
Yeah.
You must never tell her we're bringing it up.
He said, as soon as he said to you, you're not, he knew you were going. Lovely. You said that the market was, that your family used the market.
The Kensington Market.
In what ways?
They shopped. The chicken stores were there. The butcher stores were there.
They shopped here.
They used to go like with a bundle buggy.
Pickles were always the thing we had. Put your hand in so they tasted better.
They used to go with a bundle buggy.
Yes.
Kind of a thing. And that's how they brought the groceries home.
So a lot of the groceries were bought at Kensington Market.
Absolutely, yes.
An awful lot were bought there. The mother of Shalom used to walk from Markham Street sometimes to go to Augusta.
Yeah, with a bundle
buggy. Food stands and different things to buy groceries there.
Yeah.
What was the name of the store, the butcher store she dealt with? I can't remember. Greenspan.
It was Greenspan.
It was Greenspan.
There was another one.
In fact, when I moved up here, she says, you're not buying nothing up here. Everything up here is Trafe. I says, not Trafe. She says, it's Trafe. I'll make the order. You tell me what you want. Joey will come and pick everything up.
So the market was...
In fact, I have two older sisters... If Saturday night, if they were very good, my mother would wake up the oldest sister and take her with shopping.
Saturday night after Shabbos.
And she was the lucky one that could go
to the market. So the market was important
very
to
both of your
family.
It was part of the Jewish
into your life.
Yeah. Was the university significant at all?
The university was a privileged, very privileged. The families couldn't afford to send the kids. So if you had a very clever son who did very, very well, he would be able, not always, he would be able to go.
With a scholarship, you mean?
I don't think there were scholarships.
I never heard of scholarships.
But they were few and far between. The families needed, especially boys, to go out and earn a living to help. Everybody paid rent, paid into the house. So that was a real, real privilege.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let me tell you, a little bit better after the war.
The kids that did go were fabulous students. Mm-hmm. And they did really, they brought the community great pride. They graduated, became lawyers and doctors at great, great, great difficulties.
So the family sacrificed.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, but you know, once they started and they were accepted in the courses, they shone.
They really shone.
They headed the classes, the medals, the golds, and the silvers. The Jewish community was very into it.
And proud of
them. You could be very proud.
Yeah.
We had a couple, Dr. Jerry and Mae Cohen. They're my age.
Mm-hmm.
When they went to Harvard Collegiate, they were already a twosome. She would pass first, he would pass second, and this went on with them both through medical school. He got the gold, she got the silver, and then we would wait. The Jewish community would wait to hear, it would be in the paper, the results of what this couple, and it was very difficult for their families, but they really shone.
And everybody Shep Nachas. Everybody was proud.
Together, the community Shep Nachas, because everybody knew how difficult it was to send. I have a relative in those years He went to medical school. My uncle was also a paper hanger. Like, he said, I'm not sending him. I need him to help me out. And the family came
together. He was the youngest. He was a late child.
You don't stop him. He's, but I can't afford. They came financially, and they helped. So he became a blood specialist.
Very nice.
But I'll tell you, he's humble. He never, ever forgets this family.
We still call him
plastered with their name wherever he can possibly put
so
it.
He's generous.
He speaks of this father and mother with such high regard.
So he appreciates
it. Oh, 100%. Yeah. But everybody came for it because it was hard to send. Yeah. Girls didn't go. Very few.
I'm going to change the topic. There's just so much that we're talking about. Do you remember the end of World War II?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
1945.
Oh, yes.
And what do you remember happened?
Well, I was 15 years old, and I remember this announcement. I lived on Brunswick, and I remember they let us out of school.
Yeah.
Got out of school, and it was, everybody was screaming and yelling in the streets and shouting. It came home, and everybody came out of their home.
It was mayhem.
It was warm, and the excitement was jubilant.
Yeah.
Tears, laughter, greetings, people hugging, kissing, families who still had boys overseas. It was a very, very special, special time. Big celebration.
It's a lovely description.
It was and very
just
special.
That, you could get salmon after that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Really, you know what they do with a box of salmon or a bottle of liquor? Everything was rationed. Gasoline was rationed. Uh-huh. And if a coupon for gas, if you had a car, everything
Well,
was
she lived in Canada.
Hey?
She lived in Canada.
But, so what do you remember about the announcement of the end of the world, of the end of the World War II?
VJ Day.
What do you remember?
V-Day.
Like Fager says, everybody was so happy watching the news. You know, we're watching different things, especially if you went to a movie theater, showing all the newsreels, what was going on over in Europe as the soldiers were starting to come home.
Yeah.
And it was a very happy time for most people, you know.
Yeah. I
my uncle,
when you say most
lived
people,
on Robert Street. He had three sons overseas. And they came home, and they made the biggest street parties. Each son came home at a different time. Each son, they made a street party. Banners. There was music on the street that when each son came off and drove into Robert.
Major celebration.
Major.
Yeah.
Imagine three sons and to come home. They came home with problems, but they came home. The excitement, you know, people left. These people all left family. They didn't know they're alive, dead, or what. The celebrations were humongous. Humongous, warm, and very special time. Very special.
And I guess for your family, it could have been.
Well, it was. We were happy, believe me, we were happy the door was over, but it was.
Painful.
It sure made us reflect and think back of different things that happened.
This is a family that I really believe never, I don't know if you get over a loss, but really adjusted.
Yeah.
He was always with them. To this day.
Well, a healthy, athletic 22-year-old.
You'd have dreams that this didn't happen, you know.
Yeah.
I remember myself, I couldn't.
No, but the way they keep the spark. Him and his brother's gone now, but they really kept that spark, and the father, every dinner we'd get together, they talked.
Good, Except for the mother who couldn't.
Mother.
Well, I guess we all cope in our own
and
way.
And after she was gone, it came out even more. It was they never stopped talking about him and bringing up cute stories. He didn't have such a long life.
Yeah.
They have so many stories, but they found stories. Very devoted family. He was a fabulous son. I'm telling you, as a wife.
Yeah.
Fabulous son.
Good to his parents.
Very caring, yeah. Very devoted. Very. He was in that house every day. He didn't talk to them.
Yeah.
Check that, but see what they needed.
I'm just going to ask one more question about the neighborhood.
And they need to name that street.
You mean the
Boys Lane? Yes, they really need to do that. Because that's such a strange situation. I mean, there are other boys, of course, that have been long. But you know, I don't think there's another street that had all these boys from one street. They live almost next door to each other.
Well, you know, the city is saying we want to... We'll name the lanes, and we want one-word names. Mm. And we're saying this is one we're really going to fight for, because we want this to be called the Boys of Major.
They deserve that.
So we're going to really fight for that.
They deserve
that. Yeah,
they deserve that.
And the last question is the issue of security and safety in the neighborhood. Did you lock your doors?
Never. I never had a key.
No.
I do not remember owning a key to a house.
No, very seldom did you lock anything.
Who locked anything? I never had a key.
Yeah.
I could come home 11 o'clock at night, walk down a dark street. I never gave it a thought that somebody is going to hurt me.
Yeah.
Or did my family think somebody might hurt me. It was very safe.
And Joey, that was your experience,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely.
Did you have a key?
I never thought about really locking the door, especially. Something valuable, you wouldn't leave it, you know, but you never think of really locking it up.
They were boys. We were girls.
Locking up.
My sisters didn't have no keys, and they, too, could come home. Usually we'd be coming home from the Y somewhere. Nobody thought, you know, how are you getting home? Who's coming for you? It was very safe.
Another thing, my dad being a milk driver, as he aged, he would hire somebody to help him do the route. And I'd never know who was going to wind up sleeping downstairs at the cot to help him deliver this milk. He once had the professional, his name was Mulligan, he was the Canadian heavyweight champion of the world, a black fellow. Nicest guy, Mulligan was his name. He was helping deliver milk. He was about 17.
A world heavyweight champion?
Heavyweight champion of Canada. Oh, Mulligan.
Yeah.
Vernesco.
Yeah.
That was his name.
And he would, and he was delivered with your father, milk. And sometimes...
He'd give him $5 or something.
Yeah.
Because we're going to earn $5 in 1939 or something, you know.
Oh, yeah. That was good pay.
We try to get a Coca-Cola bottle so we get two pennies for it.
Yeah.
Cash
yeah.
it in. Charles Tickets.
They were good days for the kids, but not for the adults.
Because of what?
They understood the finances. The kids did not understand the finances. I mean, my friends didn't look different than me or what. So I wasn't aware that I was poor. But the parents, they were aware of bills to pay, to do. For them, it was a terrible struggle. Terrible, terrible struggle.
But they didn't burden you with it. Or
you heard it.
You did.
You heard it in the house.
You were aware of it.
How are we going to pay the bills? How are we going to do this? Yeah. And we knew we had 10 people living in this house, one washroom.
Were you 10 people living there?
It could be.
Yeah, and one washroom.
One washroom. Everybody's always knocking at the door for you to come out.
Yeah.
But, like, everybody had that, so it wasn't different. But for the adults, it was a very big struggle.
Yeah. And not much privacy and not much quiet.
No,
privacy.
No. How about the telephone?
You shared the telephone.
Oh,
and
party line.
And the girls would get annoyed. The call from the boyfriend. Get off the phone already. Get off. This would go on.
If you had a landlady,
some
of
the language used on these phones.
You were in big trouble.
I can't tell you.
You know, we have a man in our synagogue. His name is Sid Gladstone. And he goes around to the high schools. And he is from the Depression years. And he tells the kids, the teenagers, what it was like to grow up in Toronto in the 30s. And I once said to him, Sid, are they really interested? How can they relate? You would be surprised. The questions they had, financial questions. He says, they're booking me all the time.
So they are interested.
They are interested.
Wonderful.
It goes around the school.
I think that, yeah. I couldn't believe that they would want to. How can they relate to this? But he does.
Good. Mm-hmm. So this is. I'm going to end our.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop throwing questions at you. But when you think of all the years that you lived down there, is there anything, before I was coming and you were thinking about what she's going to ask, is there anything that I haven't talked about that you would like to talk about?
I really thought that this would be more about the Solly.
Yeah, we kind of got sidetracked.
We did get sidetracked because
that wasn't
he's
sidetracking.
Really what this talk is all about. It's what he did for his country, not him, the boys.
Mm-hmm.
I think the street made a humongous sacrifice. Humongous.
By all those boys going
they gave
off.
Their sons.
Yeah.
And they all lived on the same street. That street was devastated. It's like it being was bombed. Those people were never the same.
I just know one fellow who came back aircrew. His Toplin was his name. You might have it in your records. I see his kid sister, Seppi.
Oh, yeah.
He was an observer aircrew.
He lived on Major Street, too?
A number of tours, and the plane got shot down. All of a sudden, went missing. But lucky for him, he bailed out. But went missing. It took a while till he wound up in prisoner of war camp with his tags. So I forget how many weeks
found.
It took. They found that he was alive.
He's buried in France.
And he came back and he opened up. He manufactured men's sport jackets. Top Fine, Spadina and
is he alive?
Queen. Top Fine.
Is he clothing. Alive?
No, he's gone. He's gone now.
My grandma was buried in France.
Maxie?
Toplin. Toplinski. Toplin.
Yeah.
So he's buried in France. Yes, yeah. There's a grave.
Yeah.
And I think the city should give that real great consideration that a street gave so much, and all they're asking in return is for a name.
We're trying very hard.
I know.
We are really fighting for it.
I hope so.
Yeah, we are.
I hope you win.
You're going to try to see Joe Greenberg, Dr. Joe?
Yeah, as I said, I spoke to him a few times.
Most
and
interesting.
He's postponed.
Not well himself.
Why is he postponed?
He lives.
He's very involved with this.
Yeah, I'll phone him again, maybe today or tomorrow.
I don't think he's that well.
No, he's okay up here, but he can't walk too
well. Yeah. Oh, okay.
He's got to be about 89, I was going to guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has the office, his son is a doctor.
Yeah, David.
He's still, my guy was in there, I've seen him a few times.
He
Somebody
still
came
on
in and did his high blood
Bathurst?
Pressure. He couldn't walk.
Yeah.
He did his high blood pressure.
He lives there forever.
Yeah.
He's a character in some ways because he's really from the old school. But he can give you a lot of information.
Well, I'm. You know what? I'm going to phone him today or tomorrow because
what,
I have
what
to.
What do you
speak
do at the hospital?
Well, I'm going to turn this machine off and talk about it. But first of all, I just want to say thank you, Faggy. Thank you, Joey.
This it's has our been pleasure.
But a thank
I'm
you
so
for
glad
taking
that you,
interest.
Yeah, took the interest
to
keep this alive. Really,
these guys
we're
really
delighted that
it.
There are people who care.
Yeah, we do care, and that's why we asked you to, you know, give us your initials so that we can share some of this information.
We're very whatever comes of it.
Yeah.
At least there were
at
people
we know you
who tried
yeah.
and cared, and you spent this whole afternoon with our pouring out a zillion stories for you to absorb.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure we could sit here for another 2 hours. We won't.
I'm sure
but
we
it's
could.
It's been very, very, very pleasurable for me, very interesting. And you've shared wonderful, interesting stories, so I want to thank both of you very, very much.
I'm glad you came.
Me too.
What I said. Okay, what I'd like to say about these boys, if I had the opportunity, I would take myself down to the board looking after this, and I would get down on my knees and ask that this honor be given to these boys who lived on that street, because they deserved it, their families deserve it, and the generations after them deserve to hear that.
Lovely. We're fighting for it, as I said.
But I'm glad that you said it for all of us to listen.